Chapter 3. Do you remember the bees? The strange swarms of bees that kept coming, thousands of them. I opened the windows in my bedroom and they flew in. The first time they found their way into my bedroom on their own, the next time I had to invite them by opening all four windows. They were so calm and friendly and landed in clusters, one hanging from the opening in the mosquito net around my bed and another in one of the window frames. I couldn't close my window for days. At night, a few stayed inside my closed net. I knew they meant no harm. These bees were acting strangely. They weren't so alive that they were busy stinging themselves to death. I liked having a house that big swarms of bees would circumnavigate and enter through cracks and openings. The fact that they all got weaker and eventually fell down dead on the floor one by one was the part I chose not to take seriously. It happened 3 times in a week. Margaret, my giant, soft-spoken maid of the Kamba tribe, kept sweeping them out, without any sign of surprise or inquisitiveness about the one room in the house that kept filling up with bees. Her serious sweeping made me laugh, and I used it as a picture later in one of my letters to you. As you remember, I started off saying, "Maybe we will be together one day." And then it became, "Maybe we will be together in 25 years. You used to get so cross when I said that. You hated it and refused to express any kind of amusement at the thought. You are not the kind of person who would let a piece of chocolate melt in your hand. Or a piece of ice. Strange, all those newspapers would call me that later. You see, our love was all a bit frightening at first, for several reasons. I was with another man who had since long chosen to become my best friend as opposed to a lover, but I still thought I would hurt him frightfully by being the first to let go. I was wrong. After we parted, he turned to another woman without the slightest pause. He only ever once met me after that. He made the meeting as brief as possible and then, very strangely, handed me a bunch of cigars on his way out from the room I had taken in a hotel for squirmishly chirpy Kilimanjaro climbers. For months, I kept coming across the silver holsters of Romeo and Julieta amongst my shoes and clothes. There's nothing I could have done or wanted to do to stop you from becoming my life's love. The heart is the heart, but it mattered to try to square things with a man I'd spent so many years with. I needed to look him in the eyes and tell him that I had moved on as soon as he came back. I didn't want to do it over the telephone. It looks so childish now that I've lost my love and my best friend forever. Disaster, pain, and death swallowed us all up anyway. I had tried. I tried to push away, until both of us settle our affairs. I even tried convincing myself that it was just lust at first. Of course, you wouldn't stay away, and the emotions I tried to calm with fragments of self-deceit in the form of simple indulgences were getting totally out of control. With fear, I watched myself search for solutions far more likely than true love. Love would always deprive me of my freedom. That was before we laughingly understood that it was a fear we had always both had, the fear of not being close enough when close and not far enough apart when apart, yet always together. I lay on my bed one afternoon whispering to the bees, who by then knew most of my thoughts as they flew in and out of my bedroom. Quote, Korimboje för trädets skull, 1935. Jag visst gör det ont när knoppar brister. Varför skulle annars våren tveka? Varför skulle all vår heta längtan bindas i det frusna bitterbleka? Höljet var ju knoppen hela vintern. With a teacup in your right hand and one in my left, searchingly as if I didn't know whether I was to find gold or landmine.